Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Sukkah, Daf Chav Gimel. We're starting at the Mishnah Chav Beis Amud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. The Daf will be learned Lezecher Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We are starting our next Mishnah. Our next Mishnah talks about where to place your Sukkah. Okay, we've been speaking much about the dimensions of the Sukkah, and now we speak about where exactly should we place the Sukkah. Well, what difference does it make where you put it on the ground? That's fine. The Mishnah says, "Osa sukkas berosha gala." Let's say I don't put it on the ground. Let's say I put it on a wagon or a berosha sfina. Let's say I put it on a boat kshera. So the Mishnah says it's fine. It's a kosher sukkah. What's the concern? What's the consideration? Meaning, let's see if we can understand the first line of the Mishnah a little bit better. Why would it be an issue? What difference does it make where I put the sukkah? So if you take a look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi writes, "Alfa gav de metaltala velo kviya." So Rashi says that the problem is that it's movable, and being that it's a movable sukkah, so it's not koveya. It's not established. So Rashi over here provides two concerns: one for the wagon sukkah and one for the boat sukkah. The wagon sukkah, says Rashi, is that it's a movable sukkah, and I would have thought the havamina would have been that because it's a movable sukkah, so therefore it's not stationary; it's in motion, and it's not kavua; it's not an established sukkah. So again, it goes back to machlokis that we've seen time and again, that we've spoken about already a number of times over the course of the Masechta. In other words, does your sukkah need to be a diras keva, or can it be a diras arai? So as we pointed out consistently, it's machlokis between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda. So the Tanakam says that the sukkah has to be diras arai, meaning that's, we talked about this from day one. And Rav Yehuda says, no, your sukkah needs to be diras keva. So possibly, the Mishnah over here that says that the wagon sukkah is good is going like the position of diras arai. That's certainly the way Rashi seems to frame the whole discussion. Okay. The second sukkah about the boat sukkah, so Rashi says the problem over there is the elements. In other words, there's no mountains, there's nothing breaking the wind, no wind breakers. So therefore, the sukkah is really exposed and open to the elements, and the wind may blow it down. And again, the Mishnah says that's fine. That's not a problem. We get to the Gemara in just a moment. We'll discuss more about the sukkah on the top of the boat. Olin la b'yamtav. Now, the Mishnah then says you can go on in anyantav. Now, as Rashi points out, that's a no-brainer. Of course you can go up on anyantav. Meaning, isn't that the whole purpose of a sukkah? Meaning, by sukkahs, you're going to have one day of yantav. And Shmini Atzeres, but Shmini Atzeres is Mount Sukkah. It's not a time that we send the sukkah, so... And of course, here in the Galus, we're in the Sukkah for 2 days of Yantav. But the point, of course, is that you can go up on Yantav, and Rashi points out, it's an obvious point, it's something that we all know, they can go up on Yantav. Rashi says this sets us up for the next part of the Mishnah, which we'll see in just a moment. Shtayim be'ilan, sorry, I skipped a line. Berosha ilan o algabe gamal. Let's say I put the Sukkah either on top of a tree or on top of a camel. So kshira. So once again, the sukkah is good. It's a kosher sukkah. Now, in terms of putting your sukkah up on the tree, so there is a concern. There is a consideration which we'll get to in just a moment. In terms of putting up on the camel, first of all, I'd be scared out of my mind. I rode on the camel. Didn't enjoy it. I don't know who likes it. Anyway, but fine. What's the concern with putting a sukkah on top of a camel? Well, not the concern, but what would have been the consideration? The consideration is that you're not allowed to ride an animal on Yantav. You're not allowed to ride an animal on Shabbos. Now, the reason why you're not allowed to do so, we spoke about this back in Masechta Shabbos, is for fear that I'm going to take a branch, that I'm going to pass the tree, take a branch, rip it off the tree in order to hit the animal. So it's exerid the rabbanon. It's a rabbinic decree, I may come break a branch off a tree. So therefore, the chacham made a general exerid that you're not allowed to go on the back of an animal on Shabbos, neither on Shabbos nor on Yantav. So the Mishnah says that the Mishnah is as follows: even though I can't use the sukkah of the camel on Yantav, nevertheless, it's a good sukkah. So when am I going to use it? The answer is obvious: Chol HaMoed. So Chol HaMoed, you use it, but on Shabbos you won't, and on Yantav you won't use it. What about the sukkah of the tree? So here, the Mishnah also makes this very same point. The Mishnah says that if I make my sukkah in a tree, so once again, the sukkah is a good sukkah, but I can't climb the tree on Yantav nor on Shabbos. So therefore, once again, it's going to be a sukkah that's limited just for Chol HaMoed. I can't use it on Yantav. Now let's take a look at Rashi together. Rashi talks about the sukkah made on the tree. So Rashi writes as follows: Berosha Ilan. Now, the way Rashi describes it, it's going to be a little bit difficult to visualize, because the way Rashi is going to describe it is that basically the tree is the base of the sukkah. Let's see the Rashi inside. Birosha Ilan Tikein Moshavo Birosho Vasosha Mechitzos Vesichach. So basically, the tree is the base of the sukkah. I build walls on top of it, and I put the schach on top of it. So basically, the way Rashi is describing it, it's a treehouse. It's a treehouse sukkah. And Rashi further points out that it's a treehouse sukkah. Kshera, the next Rashi, L'chol Shabbat, V'af B'yamtav, V'imav V'v'ala, Lo Yosi Yedei Chavoso, V'ein Olin La B'yamtav. Now, you can't go up on a yamtav. Now, Rashi writes, the Gaza Baraba, the Ein Olin B'ilan. You can't climb a tree on Yantav. In other words, again, Rashi, consistent with his viewpoint that the problem over here, not the problem, and there's Xerid the Rabbanan, but the visual that we should picture is basically the sukkah is up in the tree. And Rashi points out that you can't use a tree for fear that we're going to break a bench. In other words, you can't climb a tree on Yantav, so therefore there's just simply no way of accessing the sukkah. Right. So from Rashi, first let's do more Mishnah. Let's do a little bit more Mishnah, and then I'll come back. We'll discuss a little bit more. Shtayim be ilan va'achas be day adam. O shtayim be day adam va'achas be ilan kshera. So the Mishnah over here is just going to further delineate this sukkah that's up in a tree. So let's say two of the walls of sukkah are being supported by a tree, and one is not. Okay, or the two walls are going down to the ground, and achas be'ilan, and one wall is being supported by the tree, k'shera. So once again, the sukkah is fine. That's not a problem. Ein olam abiyamtiv, but you can't climb it on yantiv. Because, once again, this tree now is being supported by, the sukkah is being supported by a tree, and therefore you can't climb it on yantiv. And the chiddush of the Mishnah now is follows. Follow the chiddush. Even though only one of the three walls is being supported by the tree, it doesn't matter. Meaning, as long as the tree is an integral part of the sukkah, right? And if I were to have removed the tree, the sukkah would fall down. And in this case, sukkah, we only mean one wall of the sukkah doesn't matter. Because one of three walls is one wall too many. Meaning, I can't have one wall fall down if all I have is but three walls. So therefore, if I were to remove the tree and the sukkah is no longer there, so then the sukkah is tree-bound. And once the sukkah is tree-bound, so once again, the validity of the sukkah still remains good. Can I go up on such a sukkah on Yantav? The answer is going to be no. And once again, Rashi, just one more Rashi on this topic. Most of the sukkah is being supported by the tree. And one of the walls comes all the way down to the ground. Or Rashi says, you could just change the numbers, but the point's going to be the same. Two are man-made, but one is leaning and resting on the tree. Ho, on top of the next time in Rashi. Ho, v'iminatel ha'ilan, nofel karkios ha'sukkah. If the tree goes, basically the floor of the sukkah is going to go. So you can't go up on Anyantav. So again, I'm hopefully hammering this point enough times. What you get out of Rashi is that the whole sukkah over here that we're constructing this Mishnah is basically a treetop sukkah. It's a treehouse. It's a sukkah built in a tree, and it's really the base of the sukkah, the floor of the sukkah that's being supported. And again, the point is that if one, two, three, or I can go in the other direction, three, two, or even one of the walls of the sukkah is being supported by the tree. So once again, now this is considered a tree-bound sukkah, and I can't use it on yantiv. Kasher sukkah, I just can't use it on yantiv. Okay.
So if your ladder went directly up
into the... Right. Once the sukkah is connected to the tree, and once if the tree goes, the sukkah goes, the sukkah is considered part of the tree. And regardless of how I climb up the sukkah, it doesn't matter. Meaning sitting in the sukkah is tantamount to sitting in the tree, and therefore can't use it. Okay, that's the way Rashi sets it up. I'm going to just point out...
This whole concept of not touching a tree on Shabbat is considered a rabban, right? Now, mitzvah sitting in sukkah is midoraita.
Right.
Why isn't that docha midoraita?
Well, not only is it... First of all, it's a good question. Secondly, later on... We're gonna have a discussion of the following. Meaning, right now the Gzeirah d'Rabbanan prevents you from climbing up on the sukkah. I'm not gonna help you. I'm only gonna make your question stronger. So first of all, I apologize. But right now we're talking about not going up on your sukkah because of the Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. Later this morning we're gonna talk about perhaps invalidating your sukkah because of Gzeirah d'Rabbanan. Here we're not even that extreme. So wait a little bit later this morning, and we're going to be even more extreme about how the rabbinic decree is going to affect the sukkah d'araisa. Okay.
You'll go up and sit in the tree, so you can climb the mitzvah.
Yeah, in other words, you'll be... Right, in other words, there's a rabbinic ban on climbing it. The Mishnah says you can't do it, but the Mishnah also admits the sukkah is a valid sukkah. Just one thing to point out. If you take a look at Tosfos over here, I'm not going to go through it right now, but Tosfos on the bottom of Chav Beis Amud Beis, so he paints a different picture in terms of how the sukkah is connected with the tree. It's not like Rashi, not like it's a treetop sukkah, but rather the actual tree itself serves as the wall of the sukkah. Okay, see Tosfos for a different explanation of the Mishnah. We're going to go on in the Gemara. We're on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. Mani Masnisan, who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Kivahi. Now again, we spent a lot of time with the tree sukkah. We're back to the beginning of the Mishnah. Beginning of the Mishnah talked about making a sukkah either on the wagon or on the boat. And the Mishnah says the sukkah is fine. Mani Masnisan, Rabbi Kivahi. So who's the author of that position? The Gemara points out, we know from a Braisa, it is Rabbi Kiva. We see the Braisa right now. If you make a sukkah on the top of a boat, so Rabbi Gamliel says it's no good, it's an invalidated sukkah, and Rabbi Kiva says it's good. There was an incident with Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamliel who were on a boat. You will find throughout Shas a number of incidents where Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamliel were on a boat. In this case, it's regarding sukkah. So, Amad Rabbi Kiva v'asa sukkah b'rosh hasfina. Rabbi Kiva makes a sukkah on the top of the boat. Lamacha nash baruch v'akrasa. And what happens? Windy. It sounds like, by the way, it sounds like that they were not just on a boat, but the boat was traveling. Although you could argue. But either way. They're on the boat. The Rabbi Kiva builds a sukkah on the boat. Next day, wind blows the sukkah down. So Amrul Rabbi Gamliel Akiva Hechen Sukascha. So Rabbi Gamliel says to his where's your sukkah? Now he wasn't asking a factual question. He wasn't wondering, hey, what happened to your sukkah? In other words, this was a jab. And basically, what he's saying was, it was never a sukkah. Meaning the fact that you built a sukkah, but you knew that the wind was strong and you knew that the wind was going to blow it down, that's not a sukkah. And so therefore, basically what Gamliel was asking was not where's your sukkah, but that never was a sukkah. That wasn't a kasher sukkah. Okay, so basically we have a machlok between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Kiva in terms of the validity of building a sukkah on a boat. Rabbi Kiva says it's fine, and Rabbi Kiva even built a sukkah on the boat, even though it blew down the next day, but obviously he felt that the sukkah was valid. And Rabbi Gamliel says, no, shouldn't have done it. There was no, it wasn't a good sukkah. Amar Abaye, dekuli amar hechadeinu yechol amar beruch mitzuya diyavasha lo klumhi. Look, if your sukkah, Abaye basically is going to basically paint our strike zone, meaning, here's the area we all agree on. Here's the area where there's a dispute between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamliel. The kuliyama hecha de'eni yecholam ad baruch mitzuya. Look, if your sukkah is so weak that it can't stand just a regular wind, meaning just a right nice day, nice breeze, and your sukkah is going to fall as a result of that, so lo klumhi. Everyone's in agreement that that can't be viewed as a sukkah. There's no debate between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamliel. Your sukkah has to be able to tolerate quote unquote normal wind. Now let's say you built a tremendously sturdy sukkah, hurricane proof. Your sukkah is so good that it can even withstand hurricane winds, so everyone would agree that that's kosher. Of course. When the machlokes says, the gear so over here, Baruch Mitsuya Diyam. Okay, slightly different gears than what we have in the Gemara. But anyway, what if your sukkah can tolerate quote unquote regular wind, but your sukkah cannot tolerate hurricane winds? Is that a good sukkah? Rabbi Gamliel Savar, that's the machlokus between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Gamliel Savar, sukkah dira keva be in it. So put Rabbi Gamliel on the list of Tanayim. I think we did. All right, we right earlier in the Masechta. We created a list of Tanaim who all said that your sukkah needs to be a diras keva, a permanent sukkah. I think we put Rabbi Gamliel on the list.
Yeah, each for different reasons.
But it's back on Zayin Amud Beis. Okay. Yep, Rabbi Gamliel is on the list. Okay, good. So Rabbi Gamliel says that your sukkah has to be diras keva. It has to be a permanent sukkah. So the kevin deinu chol amud beruch mitzuyah diam lo klomi. So, and because it can't withstand an ocean wind, so therefore a strong wind, therefore it's not a good sukkah. And Rabbi Kiva disagrees. He fundamentally holds that your sukkah needs to be diras arai, not diras keva. So therefore, as long as it can tolerate a quote-unquote regular wind, even though it cannot tolerate a strong ocean wind, nevertheless the sukkah is going to be a good sukkah. V'kevin dechol amad beruch mitzuyah diyavashak shera. Okay, so that's another application of the fundamental machlokas that we keep seeing again and again throughout the Masechta, of whether your sukkah needs to be diras keva versus diras arai. And here another application, another manifestation, where we have Rabbi Akiva saying, as long as it could withstand a regular wind, even if it's going to get blown over by a unusually strong wind, that's fine. That would be that's an acceptable sukkah. And Rabbi Gamliel disagrees. And again, as we point out from the beginning, the halacha sides with the diras arai approach and not with the diras keva approach. O al gabe gamal, putting your sukkah on a camel. Masisa mani Rabbi Meir hi d'tanya. Once again, the Gemara introduces us to another brisa and says that our Mishnah is following the position of Rabbi Meir. So we have in our Mishnah, if you're following the Shitas Tanayim, the first line of the Mishnah about building your sukkah on top of a boat, that's Rabbi Kiva. The next line of the Mishnah talking about building your sukkah on a camel, that's Rabbi Meir. Now it happens to be, it doesn't always work out this way, happens to be that Rabbi Meir is a student of Rabbi Kiva, so in this particular regard, it works. Detanya osesu kaso agabe behema, Rabbi Meir maksha, Rabbi Yehuda posel, making a sukkah on top of an animal. Rabbi Meir says it's a good sukkah, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's not a good sukkah. My time is Rabbi Yehuda. Now begs the question, why? Why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is it not good? Rabbi Meir's position, fine. What you build a sukkah. Your sukkah is a sturdy sukkah. Okay, it's a little bit strange that the sukkah is right now on the back of an animal, but so what? All right, what's wrong with it? Rabbi Yehuda Amakra, I'm sorry, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason for Rabbi Yehuda Amakra? Chagasukas tasalach shivas yamim. Your sukkah, says the Torah, has to be made for 7 days. Sukkah haru'uya l'shiva shma sukkah. Sukkah she'en ru'uya l'shiva lo shma sukkah. And so now, and the Gemara does this on a number of occasions, not only is the Torah telling us how long to be in the sukkah for, the Torah is actually defining the sukkah. Meaning the sukkah has to be suitable for 7 days. If your sukkah is not suitable for 7 days, it's not a good sukkah. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? Portable. Meaning it has to be at least fit to be sat on for 7 days. Okay, now here's right. So here's the discussion. So the discussion is, and now Ben, we get to the point which I promised earlier. And now basically what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing is the following. I can't use the sukkah all 7 days. Well, what precludes me from using the sukkah? It's an animal. I'm not allowed to ride an animal on Shabbos nor on Yom Tov. So there are two possible days on this particular sukkah that I can't go on such a sukkah. So therefore, the way Rabbi Yehuda understands the psukim, it's not a sukkah. A sukkah by definition has to be a sukkah that's fit for 7 days. And because true, Shabbos and Yom Tov can overlap, but two of the days are days in which I can't go on the sukkah. By definition, it's not a sukkah. Now let's think about this just a little bit more. Meaning, what's preventing me from going up on the sukkah on Shabbos and on Yom Tov? Gzeira d'Rabbanan. So let's digest this information. Gzeira d'Rabbanan is what's preventing us from going up on the sukkah. The Torah says the sukkah has to be valid for 7 days. It's not a biblical prohibition to go up on the sukkah, neither on Shabbos nor on Yom Tov. It's I'm saying only in the context of relatively speaking. It's only an Issur d'Rabbanan. And meanwhile, that Issur d'Rabbanan will redefine the status of the sukkah. Because the Chachamim told me I can't go on the sukkah on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, so therefore, its status is not a sukkah, because the sukkah has to be fit for 7 days.
Same idea.
The Gzeira, we're going one step further, and I'll tell you why. Because on Shabbat, because regarding lulav and shofar, all the chachamim are saying is don't use it. Right. Here, what the chachamim are saying is it's not a sukkah. Meaning, aside from the fact that you can't go up on Shabbos and in Yom Tov, chol hamoed, right? Let's use it on chol hamoed. Rav Yehuda says no, you can't, because it's not a sukkah.
Yeah, and almost every daf of this mesecta, we talk about Rav Yehuda saying that it's sukkah with the right, the jachila.
Right.
So why didn't you use that?
Who's on top of that question? I saw that. Okay.
That, well, maybe it's a strong argument.
No.
It's not a sukkah.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna.
That's a strong part.
No. I'm gonna.
On every page.
Your question is right on. I saw it. Okay, so do me a favor. If I can, I'm gonna look a little bit. Now's not a good time for me to start researching. Okay, I saw the question. It's asked by one of the Rishonim. I think it's Tosfos. Okay, I'm gonna come back. His question is perfect. His question was, Rav Yehuda was the dearest Keva Tana. Now, he's been the dearest Keva Tana since the beginning. So in other words, it has to be a permanent structure. So why not simply argue over here that's not a permanent structure? He built on the top of a camel. Correct, but the fact that we can't go into it means, in other words, again, Rav Yehuda, the way he understands the drasha, you have to be able to go into the sukkah all 7 days, period. And I can't, according to Rav Yehuda, that's exactly what just happened in the Gemara. Rav Yehuda says it has to be roi for 7 days. Sukkah shena roi l'shiva l'shma sukkah. Fine, that's the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Now the counter argument, well, that's pretty straightforward, and the Gemara spells it out. Rabbi Meir, hanami v'daraisa mechzei chazir v'rabanu d'gaz rabbi. And Rabbi Meir's counter argument is, it is a good sukkah. Meaning, I can use it all 7 days. The fact that I can't go up on Shabbos, the fact that I can't go up on Yom Tov, that's a gzera d'rabanan. But let's not allow the gzera d'rabanan to redefine the status of the sukkah. Meaning, in other words, we'll separate the d'raisa and the d'rabanan. In other words, if I just looked at it from a d'raisa standpoint, we're not going to ignore the d'rabanan, but just in terms of giving status and defining it, look, from the Torah standpoint, can I climb the sukkah on Yom Tov? Yeah. Can I climb on the camel on Yom Tov? Sure. Can I climb on it on Shabbos? Again, yes. So again, I won't do it because the Chachamim tell me not to do it. But from a d'raisa standpoint, I could. So we're not going to redefine the sukkah based on gzera d'rabanan. That's Rabbi Meir's counter-argument. Good. So that's the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And now go back to our Mishnah and ask a simple question and give a simple answer. Who is our Mishnah following? Our Mishnah says that a sukkah built on top of a camel is a good sukkah. Our Mishnah is following like Rabbi Meir, not like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Continuing. Also, lebehem a dofin lesukkah. Okay. The Gemara is going to segue now into a related topic, and that is using an animal as a wall. Okay. Peter would not be happy with these Gemaras that are coming up. Okay, but thankfully, I don't have to answer to them. So and that is basically, why don't we... Tosus does ask the question. Yeah. Okay, great. But he's going to do better than me because he's going to tell you which Tosus it is. I remember seeing it, I just don't remember where it is. Okay, we'll come back. Let's say you use an animal as a wall of a sukkah. Good or no good? Okay. Again, just think about this. Now I know. Put aside our sensitivity to animals. I like animals also. I like dogs. I'm not big on cats. But the put aside.
But the discussing animals after 7 days, it's a design the animal has done.
Again, this is the analytical part of the Gemara. We're going to be super analytical now for the next off. Just, you know, and any sensitivity you have, any emotion you have towards animals, put them aside, right? Admittedly, for me it's easy because I have very little to begin with, but in other words, put it aside. Just deal with the analytical. Can I use an animal as a wall? The answer basically is yes. Meaning, again, where the animal is substantive, it's mass. So just simply put in other words, I have two walls, and I need a third wall to the sukkah, And okay, good. So you take an animal and you put it over there, and the animal will occupy space. And the animal will serve as the third wall. So, Asa lebehema dofen l'sukkah, Rabbi Meir post the Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Here it's funny. We're going to go now in the other direction. Right? But again, it's a different issue. It's not the same issue. We're not defining the sukkah now. We just simply want to use the animal for a wall. Not a big deal. So Rabbi Meir post Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Meir says, no, you can't use it. It's disqualified. And Rabbi Meir says it's kasha. Shaya Rabbi Meir omer called davar sheish bo ruach chayim. Ein osin law. Lo dofen l'sukkah, v'lo lech l'mavi, v'lo pasen l'briers, v'lo gol l'kever. Rabbi Meir says, I can't use an animal for any type of wall structure. Let's just go quickly, let's explain each one of them. So, number one, you can't use it for a dofen for sukkah. Okay, good, that's a wall for a sukkah. So I can't use an animal for a sukkah. For the wall of the sukkah. Number two, lechi l'mavi. Okay, remember, beginning of Erevin, first parak of Erevin, I have my mavui, it's three walls. Fourth wall opens up into Rishus HaRabim. I can, and the mavui is Rishus HaYachid. I can only carry the mavui if I put a heker at the entrance of the mavui. So what's it going to be? A vertical pole. How about this? Instead of a vertical pole, tie an animal to the front of the mavui. And right, leash an animal right there. Good? So Amir says, no, it's no good. And V'lo Pasan LeBei Raos. What about when you're traveling to Yerushalayim for Regal, and we're stopping for Shabbos, and I want to create a makeshift Rishus HaYachid? Now we're moving to the second parak of Erevin. Right, it's great. We get to review. And the second parak of Erevin, as long as I put four brackets in the four corners, I've created a makeshift Rishus HaYachid. What if I don't have an actual wall for the brackets? What if I just, again, leash an animal to make one of the brackets, four brackets? Rav Meir says, no. Gola lekever. Okay, this one is admittedly going to be odd in the context of animals. But the cover of an aron. Cover of an aron. Now here we get to another very classic debate between Rashi and Tosfos. I'm presenting the Gemara like Rashi. You want to see Tosfos' presentation, you could take a look at Tosfos, logo look ever. But Rashi says we're talking about the top of an aron, the cover of an aron of a mace. The cover of an aron of the mace gives off the same tumah as the mate itself. So the mace gives off magamasa and ohel. The golel, the cover, is also going to give off the tumah of magamasa and ohel. Mishum Rav Yosef Glili Amru Afin Kosen Olav Gitin Hashim. And Rav Yosef Glili is of the opinion that I cannot write a get on an animal. Okay, which the Gemara discusses in detail elsewhere. Not now. Anyway, okay. Let's give some understanding. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. What's the machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? Meaning, can I use an animal as a wall for a sukkah? Rabbi Yehuda says, sure, no problem. And Rabbi Meir says, no, you cannot. Why not? Meaning, the Rabbi Yehuda position, quite frankly, is the easier position to understand. Meaning, again, the animal is mass. The animal is substance. So, we're putting the animal on the side of the sukkah. It serves as a wall. Rav Meir says it does not work. It's not good. Why not? So my time at the Rav Meir, what's the reason for Rabbi Meir? So the Gemara is going to give two explanations. Abaye Amar Shematama. So Abaye says the animal may die. And what? We'll explain in just a moment. And Rabbi Zera Amar Shemativrach. And Rabbi Zera says the animal may run away. Okay. Rabbi Zera is easier to explain. Meaning, here's a wall. Wake up tomorrow morning. There is no wall. the animal ran away. Okay, that's a concern I totally understand. The animal dies, and therefore what? So I would have said, right, that it's just gonna, it's gonna stink up your sukkah, and it's gonna be terrible.
Tumah there?
No. In other words, no. First of all, you only become tame if you touch it or if you carry it. There's no ohel.
But the thing is that we said that anything that's susceptible to tumah cannot be a scot, right?
Yeah, but that's chach.
And then yesterday we had there was opinion that anything that cannot be mamed for
okay, wall, but yeah, but it, but the wall again, the, it's we're talking about the wall. All I need is substance. I just need mass. Because it could be anything. So the Gemara says Shematama. So what does that mean? So I take a look at Rashi. So the animal may die in Yantav. The tipol, the inkan dofen. And what's going to happen is that if the animal dies, the animal's going to obviously collapse. And I may not have a wall. Rashi goes on to write, Benimsa batel mitzvah sukkah, and therefore it may not be fulfilling mitzvah sukkah. Meaning, again, in order for it to be a wall, what does it have to be? It has to be the dimensions of 10 tefachim high. So obviously, I'm only going to get an animal that's 10 tefachim high. But if the animal dies, the animal's going to collapse, and I don't have a sukkah that's 10 tefachim high. Okay, so now, I know this is going to sound like strange gemara coming up, but now the gemara says, well, what if I have an extraordinarily large animal? Where even upon death, the animal still, whatever slumped from the animal is still going to be over 10 tefachim high. Oddly enough, the Gemara fleshes this one out, pun really not intended. Bipil kashur, let's say we're using an elephant. The Gemara uses that as the example of the large animal. So bipil kashur, if it's an elephant, then the elephant's tied up. So kuli amalo pligi di inami ma'is yesh benivla soyud. So even if it dies, you're going to still have 10, it's still going to be 10 tefachim high. And therefore, there would presumably be no machlokas. Meaning, Rav Meir's position, there's nothing, again, fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with the animals being used as a wall. Okay, midos aside. But fundamentally, huh? Yeah, fundamentally. Rav Meir's position is predicated on gzeira, on a concern. If we can remove the gzeira, so the Gemara's pointing out, so then even Rav Meir would be fine. So, by an elephant which is tied up, so I have neither concern. It's not going to run away, it's tied up. And even if it dies, it's still going to be 10 tefachim high. Ki pligi bepil sheino kashur. If it's an elephant that's not tied up, laman damar shem atamos lo chayshina. If the whole reason behind Rebbe Meir is that the animal may die, so here, no chshash, no problem. Laman damar gzer shem ativra chayshina. But if we're afraid the animal's going to run away, well, if it's not tied up, it may run away. Good. Laman damar gzer shem atemos nech shem ativrach. Now here, the Gemara just wonders out loud. Are these two explanations mutually exclusive? Meaning, if you're of the camp that the animal may die, the animal also may run away. Meaning, why are these two explanations of Rebbe Meir mutually exclusive? And basically, what the Gemara is going to concede is they are not mutually exclusive. So the Gemara says, if the elephant's not tied up, so you know what? We're going to be concerned. Everyone's going to be concerned. Right? The elephant's not tied up. Here, elephant, you stand right here. You are the third wall of our sukkah. Okay. Right? Okay, good. Very good. Next morning, no elephant. Okay, fine. So everybody's concerned about the animal fleeing. Keep looking at Behemoth Shura. Where we could parse over here is where the animal's tied up. Laman dar megzer shem tamas chayshin. Laman dar megzer shem tivrach lo chayshina. So now, if the animal's tied up, the animal's not going to run away. So we've taken away that concern, but upon death, we're concerned. Well, Laman damer gzer shem ativrach necho shem atamos. But the Gemara now just simply goes in the other direction. Okay, the animal's tied up, so the animal's not going to run away. He's not worried that the animal is going to die. Misa lo shchicha. So the Gemara says, no, I could separate those two concerns. The animal running away, that's normal behavior for an animal. Animals run away. So that I can easily say is a concern. Animal dying, I can say, again, we're talking now with probabilities and with likelihoods, and you're right, it may die. But you can assume normal risks in life, and the animal, we can assume the animal's not going to die. The Ha'ika Ravcha Debeni Beini, the Gemara now asks a very technical question. Okay, the animal right now, I set it up as my third wall. Right, so that's great. But as we pointed out, the definition of a wall is that it has to be 10 tefachim of mass, of substance. Now, the animal's standing on its legs, so that means that there's a nice area underneath that there's airspace. And so therefore, the Gemara wonders now, how is this going to satisfy the requirement of a wall when it doesn't go down to the ground? And as we pointed out earlier in the Masechta, if there are three tefachim separating the wall and the ground, right, Makom Shagadim Bokenbo, where the goats can just easily climb in, it's not a wall. So the Gemara gives... but we rejected... Right. We rejected the good achis earlier. So the Gemara says, David le behutz of a dafna. So the Gemara says, okay, we'll be compliant, and what we'll do is we'll just simply create some sort of matting under the belly of the animal. The Dilma Rav'a. So the Gemara says, okay, but even if the animal doesn't die, the animal may sit down. So the Gemara says, or squat. De misicha ba'ashlei mila'el. So the Gemara says, well, the animal was tied up with ropes, so the animal will not squat. In other words, we've secured the animal Okay, I'm starting to feel bad for the animal. But we've secured the animal in a way where the animal's tied up so it won't squat. There are fences below the animal, so basically the animal now can actually serve as a wall. So Zimnan Demukim, I skipped. So the Gemara says, now that we've cornered ourselves into this kind of picture where the animal's tied up so it won't squat. There's fencing below the animal so that I've covered the gaping hole on the bottom. Once we're here, so what are we concerned about? Animal's not running away. And even if the animal dies, okay, it's being tied up. Zimnin demukim bepachas mishlosha samach chachach. Top of the next amud, just read it and then I'll explain. V'kemen demaisa kavtsa v'lav adaite. So the Gemara's response is, well, because look, when it dies, what's going to end up happening is, you're right, it won't fall down, it's being held up. But when it dies, it's going to shrink just a little bit. And Rashi over here paints a scenario in which that little shrinkage of the animal when it dies can make all the difference. Because Rashi points out that maybe we made a minimalist sukkah of 10 tefachim high, and maybe the animal itself only was 7 tefachim, 7 and a little bit more. Remember, Lovet is only 4, just under 3 tefachim. And so therefore, that little shrinkage is now going to bring the animal to below 7 tefachim, and so therefore I won't have Lovet connecting the animal to the top of the wall, and that's why it's not going to be good. Admittedly, okay, I think, and I don't think I'm going off on a limb over here, admittedly, this is a very limited scenario in which the Chachamim are going to make be concerned and make a gzera and therefore say that you can't use an animal. So, right, I also think it's not irresponsible for me to say that there could be other concerns that are behind the Gemara over here, and not just this concern, right? And maybe the Chachamim are just giving us some of their understanding of why it's prohibited, and maybe there could be other reasons as well. Because admittedly, we're really talking about a very limited scenario in which the animal won't work as a wall. Okay. So once again, let's come around and let's just quickly summarize where we're at. Okay, putting the sukkah on the animal, so as we pointed out, that's a machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Rav Meir comes out on the side of, it's fine, right? What's the issue? Meaning the sukkah is a good sukkah and it's just being based on top of an animal, it's fine. Rav Yehuda says it's not a good sukkah because I can't climb it on Yontif and on Shabbos. It is a sukkah that's not fit for all 7 days, and by definition, it's not going to be a sukkah. As far as using animal as a wall for the sukkah, so once again, the machlokes are Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, but here the positions are switched, where Rav Meir says that the animal cannot be used as a wall, and Rav Yehuda says that the animal could in fact be used as a wall. So the Rav Yehuda position, as we pointed out, is fine, meaning it's easy to understand, right? We're putting aside our sensitivity for the animal. But Rav Yehuda's position is just simply, it's mass. It's substance, and as long as it meets the minimum requirements of oil, it works. Rav Meir says you can't, and why not? So the Gemara gives two explanations behind Rabbi Meir: either that we're afraid the animal is going to run away, or that we're afraid that the animal is going to die. Okay. And as the Gemara pointed out, those reasons may not be mutually exclusive. Yeah, we're gonna discuss that later in this parak about building a sukkah in the middle of Yontif. During Chol HaMoed. Okay, that discussion is coming up. Yeah, in other words, right, the Gemara says the Agala is fine. So if we can modernize the Mishnah, you want to put it on the back of your pickup truck, that's fine, that's good. Umi Amar Abai Ramer Chayish Lamisa. So the Gemara says now, what happened from this whole discussion is something very strange. And that is that the way Abai explained Rabbi Meir, Rav Meir says, I can't use an animal for a wall because we're afraid the animal's going to die. Right? Does Abai understand Rav Meir that way? And we're going to see that may not be so. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start this discussion now. Now, this discussion goes well into tomorrow's daf. So I'll start the discussion now. And it's a discussion that we've had time and again. We've done this Gemara recently. We did this Gemara in Yuma. If you look in the side of the Gemara, this Gemara comes up again and again throughout Shas. This is the famous Breira Gemara. So let's start it again. No, I'm sorry, not yet. Oh, I'm sorry. We're one step removed from Breira. I preempted that strike. First, let's learn together a Mishnah in Gittin. Basi Yisrael Shenisa is the Kohen. So I have a nice Jewish girl married to a nice Jewish boy. She's a Basi Yisrael. He's a Kohen. Okay. When you're a Basi Yisrael and you marry a Kohen, so now, good. My husband's a Kohen. You got to eat Truma. One of the benefits of being married to a Kohen. So she gets to eat Truma. And Basi Yisrael Shenisa is a Kohen. V'halach ba'ala medina sayam. And let's say the Kohen goes on a long trip. Okay? She doesn't know what's going on with him. Right? His cell phone is down. And you don't have to think that long ago, where communication was even tougher. So there was no communication between him on his long journey and her. Says the Mishnah, Ocheles b'truma b'cheska shukayim. So she can eat truma under the assumption that he's alive. Okay, it's good to know. She's allowed to worry about him, but at the same, she's allowed to do, but she can also assume that he's alive and she can still eat the truma. V'ramina nala, now the Gemara points out, ha-rei zegitech sha'achas kodem isasi, asura le'echol b'truma. Let's say he provides for her a get, and the get says, I'm going to give you a get, and the get will be effective, sha'achas kodem misasi, a moment before I die. Now, why a person would write a get like this, could think of a number of reasons why that would be. It has to be formulated in this way because in get la'achar misa, right? One of the most basic rules regarding a get is that you cannot give a get posthumously. You have to give the get while you're still alive. So basically, you give the get, and the condition in the get is that the get will be effectuated a moment before I die. Fine. So, asur le'echol b'truma miyad. The Braisa says, if she's given such a get, so, and obviously she doesn't have contact right now with her husband, so she can't eat truma. Okay, now we obviously have a basic discrepancy between.
There are no children, right?
The children could be machal her truma.
She's a mother, but she could still.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's just.
No, there's no children.
Let's just focus with the basic point on hand, and that is, what is her assumption regarding her husband? So in the Mishnah in Gittin, we said the assumption is very simple. Presumed alive. In this Braisa that we just read, what's the assumption, what's the presumption of the husband? He's dead. So the Gemara says, obviously there's a basic discrepancy between the two. V'amar Abaye. And now Abaye gives the following explanation, and let's highlight. It's Abaye giving the following explanation. Lokasha HaRebbe Meir, Delokhaish L'misa HaRebbe Yehuda, Dechaish L'misa. So the way we're going to resolve the two is very simple. The Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, which is good. Stam Mishnah to Rabbi Meir. The Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is not choshesh for death. He's not concerned about death. And Rabbi Huda is choshesh lamisa, and Rabbi Huda is choshesh for death. And so therefore the resolution is very simple. It's not elegant, but it's very simple. The Mishnah that says that it's okay, he went on a trip, he's alive, I know he's alive, I'm eating the truma, based on the presumption that he's alive, that's Rabbi Meir. The Braisa that says that if I give her a get, and the get says that this is going to be effective a moment before I die, and then he goes away, she can't eat truma. That's going like Rabbi Yehuda. So in other words, the basic machlok is between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not we're choshesh lemisa, we're not choshesh lemisa. Now this presents a problem because on our sukkah, made by an animal is used as one of the walls. Rameir says it's no good. And the reason why, says Abaye, is because we're choshesh lamisa. We're afraid that the animal is going to die. Now, granted, we're pitting humans against animals. And maybe we can make a distinction between humans versus animals. But we're far away from that. Right now, Abaye is going to make his case. How do I know that Rabbi Meir is not choshesh lamisa? And how do I know that Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh lamisa? And now I can say it. Did Tanya. So now because we learned in the Braisa, and here we have now the famous Breira discussion. The Breira discussion is in the context of the following. First of all, what is Breira? Breira is retroactive selection. Meaning I make a selection now, which will retroactively go back to an earlier point in time. Okay, it's an interesting concept that comes up a number of times. It comes up in this context again and again. What's this context? This context is the following. I'm about to go into Shabbos. And I have a bottle of wine. Fresh from the vineyard. Fresh from the winery. And what happened was is that we didn't have a chance yet to take off Trumas and Maisos. Right? That we have to heighten our sensitivity to Trumas and Maisos. I know we live in the Gullus, we don't think about it enough, but there was a mitzvah to take off Trumas and Maisos from all produce in Eretz Yisrael, according to Rashi and according to the Rambam. No. According to Rashi, it's for grapes, olives, and wheat. According to the Rambam, it's for all fruit, midaraisa. But we're talking about grapes right now. And so I made it into wine. So I have to be mafresh shumas amaisos. If I'm not mafresh shumas amaisos, so then I can't drink it. What is the status of untithed produce? It's tevel. Tevel, the consumption of tevel is a serious offense. Misa bidei shamayim. Death by the hands of heaven if anybody drinks or eats tevel. So, going into Shabbos, what I want to do is I want to be mafresh shumas amaisos. There is a rabbinic decree that one is not allowed to be mafresh shumas amaisos on Shabbos, so obviously it's something I want to take care of before Shabbos. Mafresh shumas amaisos, here's my small problem. I got no other bottles. Meaning, right now I have a very simple logistic issue. I want to take off 2% truma, 10% maaser rishon, next 10% maaser sheni, maaser ani, depending on the year. The problem is, I got nothing else to pour the bottle of wine into. So what do I do? So here's what you do. This is what the Bryce now is going to be describing. Disanya. Halokechem ibn akusim, you purchase wine from the kusim. Right? The kusim, we're going to assume, are a group that are, the wine of the kusi is fine, but the assumption is they don't take off trumas and maisos. So Omer, shnei logim shani yasid lafish harein truma. So I'm going to take off truma. How am I going to take off truma? I'll leave leftover in the bottle. Okay? Whatever I will leave off later in the bottle will serve as my truma. Now, that's a little bit strange. You have to be a mafresh truma maisos now. So how does this work? That's right. Well, now let's say it. Breira. In other words, my determination later will be retroactively effective from this moment in time. So fine, 2% going to the Kohen as Truma. But again, I'm not separating it now. I'm just simply stating, whatever I leave over will be 2% going to the Kohen. Asara Maisa Rishon. And then another 10% is going to be Maisa Rishon. Okay, 2% to the Kohen, by the way. Does the Torah say 2%? No. Torah just simply says you have to give a little bit to the Kohen. Torah does not give an actual amount. The Chachamim instituted the 2% so that it be something significant. 10%, the next 10% that goes to the Levi. Now it is interesting that the Mishnah says 10%. Why is that interesting? Because I already took off 2 for the Kohen, so there really is 98 now left over. So 10 that the Gemara uses could either be literally 10, and that the 2% that I give to the Kohen doesn't count towards the Maaser Rishon, or it could be that just simply the Gemara is lavdafka. The Gemara is just simply, it's 9.8, but the Gemara is just simply rounding up. Either way. Tisha Maaser Sheni. And now, the next 10% is Maaser Sheni. Now, here the Mishnah uses, the Bryce uses the term 9. Because here now, Maaser Rishon certainly has been taken off. So I'm now left with 90. Actually, to be more accurate, I'm left now with 88. So So now I take another 10% as Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, by the way, is only taken off in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle. Maaser Sheni, what happens to it? I have to eat it in Yerushalayim. If I want, what I can do is I can transfer the Kedusha Maaser Sheni onto money and bring the money to Yerushalayim. Umechal Vishose Miyad. And then a Mechal, meaning I am with Maaser Sheni, I actually transfer the Kedusha onto money. Meaning, Truma and Maaser Rishon are non-redeemable. So there I have to rely on the principle of Breira. But Maaser Sheni is redeemable. So you know what? You don't even have to play around with Maaser Sheni. You'll just simply transfer its Kedusha onto money, Vishos Miyad, and you drink it right away. Divrei Rebbe Meir. That is the opinion of Rebbe Meir. So basically what Rebbe Meir allows you to do is pledge that you're going to leave over 2% for the Kohen, 10% for Maaser Rishon, for the Levium, be Mechalal, redeem the Maaser Sheni of that bottle, and drink approximately close to 90% of the bottle. right? 87-88% of the bottle, and leave off 12% for the Kohen and for the Levi. And Rabbi Meir says that works. Okay, this is an odd place to stop, because we're in the middle of a machlokes. Although the truth of the matter is that it goes well into tomorrow's daf. So, but basically the point is that the point that Abai is going to make is Rabbi Meir is not concerned, right? He's not choshesh. So I understand we're not talking about death right now, but you'll see Rabbi Meir is not concerned, and therefore that leads Abai to the conclusion that the Mishnah and Gittin, so same thing. Rabbi Meir is not concerned. It's not choshesh lemisa, which then only is going to prompt the Gemara to ask, just to bring around the question full circle. So then, why does Rabbi Meir say you can't use your animal as a wall? Because the animal may die. Well, why is Abai giving that explanation? Right. In other words, we're not worried about people dying. We're not worried about the breaking of the flask. So why are you worried about the animal dying? That's basically the question, and all this will be answered well into tomorrow's daf.